Arch Musician was presented by Catherine Bott, with Anton Lesser as the man himself, Nicola Vicentino. The programme was first broadcast last year for the 500th anniversary of Vicentino's birth. And for more information, do visit the Radio 3 webpage. And additional thanks to Veneranda Fabrica del Duomo Milan and to Bob van Asperen and Martin Kienbauer for making available to us the private recording of Bob van Asperen demonstrating the microtonal harpsichord piece by Maione. And just to say, Catherine will be back after the news to celebrate the life and work of the great Spanish composer Tomás Luis de Victoria, who died in 1611. As for this evening,
on BBC Radio 3 from the 2011 Proms, a musical celebration of a great television event. Earlier this year, Human Planet brought to our screens some of the diverse cultures of the world with a musical soundtrack by Nitin Sawhney.
It was inspired by these incredible images, and I think if you write music that's inspired by incredible visuals, inevitably the music works in itself.
You can hear excerpts from Nitin Sawhney's score and also some of the performers heard in Radio 3's accompanying Music Planet series. A memorable Saturday night at the BBC Proms on BBC Radio 3 from 7:30.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. It's just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news, read by David Cornett.
Norwegian police have confirmed that at least 91 people have been killed in twin attacks in the country. A 32-year-old Norwegian man, described as a Christian fundamentalist, has been charged over both incidents. 84 people were killed when a gunman opened fire yesterday afternoon at a Labour Party youth camp at Utøya Island, west of Oslo. Witnesses described how they ran in terror as the gunman shot indiscriminately for more than an hour. Police are searching for more possible victims after many people fled into surrounding waters. The shootings came hours after a bomb explosion in Oslo near government buildings. 7 people were killed in the blast. A 27-year-old nurse has appeared in court in Manchester, charged in connection with the deaths of patients at a hospital in Stockport. Rebecca Layton faces 6 counts of causing damage with intent to endanger life or being reckless to whether life is being endangered, as well as 1 count of theft of medicine from Stepping Hill Hospital. She's been remanded in custody for a week. A demonstration is taking place in Derby, with protesters calling for the government to rethink a decision which saw a local engineering firm overlooked for a lucrative rail contract. 1,400 jobs will be cut from Bombardier after the German firm Siemens was given the £1.4 billion Thameslink deal. A former Sunday Mirror journalist says celebrities such as the footballer Rio Ferdinand and the model Liz Hurley were targeted by voicemail hackers at the paper. The journalist told the BBC's Newsnight that they witnessed routine hacking in the newsroom. Trinity Mirror papers say their journalists work within the criminal law and the Press Complaints Commission Code of Conduct. A heat wave is continuing to sweep across parts of the United States. Newark in New Jersey recorded its highest temperature since records began, reaching 42 Celsius yesterday. And the weather here a bit cooler, remaining largely dry with good spells of sunshine for most of us, although a few light showers may develop across England and Wales. Far eastern parts of the country will become windy and cloudy with light rain possible. BBC News and Weather at 1:04.
And it was read by David Cornett. Time now on Radio 3 to rejoin Catherine Bott for today's edition of The Early Music Show.
Two seraphs proclaimed one to the other, "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God of hosts, all the earth is full of his glory." The angelic voices of Pro Canzione Antiqua, directed by Bruno Turner, in a late 16th century Spanish motet, Duo Seraphim Clamabant. The composer is Tomás Luis de Victoria, who died in 1611. He dedicated his musical life to the church, working in his native Spain and Italy, and although he didn't write nearly as much music as some of his contemporaries, nowadays he's generally regarded as one of the very greatest of Renaissance composers. The next music we'll hear is performed by the 16. Conductor Harry Christophers has said of Victoria's music that his works reveal such breathtaking passion that there are times in performance when we are almost overwhelmed by their intensity. This is a setting of the Marian antiphon Salve Regina, a text Victoria returned to many times. His best-known version is for two choirs and organ. But this six-part setting is, as the 16's CD liner note says, just as perfect and magical. The 16, conducted by Harry Christophers, with a six-part setting of Victoria's Hymn of Praise to the Blessed Virgin, Salve Regina, published in 1576. And I can't resist quoting again from the CD liner notes, which sum up the power of his music. After a cogent analysis of the polyphonic techniques of that antiphon, we get this sentence. A mere mechanical description of the piece is a poor substitute to prepare one for the effect of this music in performance, the passionate beauty of which elevating the spirit of the singer or listener in the contemplation of the divine mystery of the Mother of God defies imitation by lesser mortals. So where did he spring from, this man whose music defies imitation? Tomás Luis de Victoria was born in Ávila, Spain, in 1548, the seventh of 11 children. He had some distinguished cousins on his mother's side, a naval commander, a Jesuit pioneer, a merchant who married into the Medici family in Florence. But it was his father's brothers who were to be of prime importance in young Tomás's life. They were both priests, one a canon of Ávila Cathedral. When Tomás was just 9 years old, his father died, and Uncle Juan Luis took charge of the family. The boy was sent to a Jesuit school and became a chorister at the cathedral, where he was taught by some of the leading Spanish musicians of the day. And when his voice broke, he left his home city for Rome and another Jesuit school, the Collegio Germanico. The Collegio was mainly a training centre for German future Jesuit missionaries, but, as with many of today's universities, it was foreign students who brought in the revenue. Tomás was one of many Spanish boarders. He won his place there as a singer. And the move to Rome marked the beginning of his musical career. The continuation of his rigorous Jesuit education brought him the necessary fluency in Latin and the chance to get to know the great Palestrina, who may have taught him. It's clear from Victoria's earliest compositions that he got the subtleties of Palestrina's style. All of Victoria's output is sacred, vocal, in Latin. One form he visited often was the so-called parody mass, in which pre-existing material is ingeniously worked into the music. Parody is a bit of a modern misnomer. Imitation would be a better word. They weren't meant to be satirical. Victoria built these works on fragments of his own and other people's motets, and just once on a popular song. Here are the Kyrie and Gloria from the Missa pro Victoria, a battle mass based on Zenecan's onomatopoeic tour de force, La Guerre. understandably a favourite of Philip II of Spain, the Victory Mass by Victoria, performed by the Cardinal's Music, directed by Andrew Carwood. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm celebrating the genius of the Spanish composer Tomás Luis de Victoria, whose music is one of the last flowerings of Spain's golden century. Our next music was first performed in 1573, when Victoria was still at the Jesuit Collegio Germanico in Rome. No longer a student, he was making his way in the world as a church singer and organist, and the rector of the Collegio wisely decided to retain his services as a music teacher to interested foreign students. And then Victoria was promoted to Maestro di Cappella and given responsibility for the German seminarians, perhaps in part because he could speak to them in Latin. That promotion came about because the college authorities decided to separate the seminarians from the foreign students. On the 17th of October, 1573, a parting ceremony was held at which Victoria's pupils joined in a performance of his specially composed eight-part setting of the psalm Super Flumina Babylonis. By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and wept.
Thank you.
Harry Christophers, directing the voices of the 16 in Superflumina Babylonis by Victoria, written to mark the official bifurcation of Rome's Collegio Germanico into two student bodies, one of the world, the other of the cloister. And Victoria himself was soon to make the choice between sacred and secular in his own life. In 1575, he was ordained priest at the English Church in Rome. Nothing surprising in that. Here we have a young man whose entire life is suffused with sanctity. Avila, where he grew up, had its very own living saint, the charismatic mystic Teresa. The dominant male figures in his family were priests, and he'd completed his education in the holy city of Rome. His ordination, the immense spiritual power of his music, and the fame of some of his more plangent compositions shouldn't mask the fact that Victoria was an exemplar of the truth that holiness and humour often go hand in hand. Writing in the mid-17th century, King João IV of Portugal, who knew his music very well, pointed out that he instinctively leant more towards the joyful than to the sad, and that, although there is much in his Holy Week volume that exactly suits the text, nonetheless, his disposition being naturally very sunny, he never stays downcast for long. This is Victoria's four-part setting of a hymn for the Feast of Corpus Christi, Pange Lingua Gloriosi. O my tongue, tell of the mystery of the glorious body and the precious blood. The choir of Westminster Cathedral, directed by James O'Donnell, singing Victoria's setting of the hymn by Thomas Aquinas, Pange Lingua Gloriosi. Unaccompanied singing like that is a distillation of purity. At the time of its writing, sacred music was woven into everyday life in a way that today's secular society can barely comprehend. Perhaps that's why record labels market plainsong as music to relax to. For some, the perceived otherworldliness of a cappella singing makes even the idea of mixed voices, men with women, girls with boys, abhorrent, and many listeners are reluctant to accept the intrusion of organ, sackbut or bassoon. But there's no getting away from it. In Renaissance sacred polyphony, the vocal parts were often doubled by instruments. There's a great deal of evidence to show that doubling was widely practiced when Victoria's music was performed in Spain. He published almost all of his works during his lifetime in sumptuous editions, and some have separate organ parts, for the very obvious reason that while singers and instrumentalists could all gather round to sing and play from choir parts, no vocal scores in those days, the organist would need to prop his own part up above the manuals. Here's a good example of creative orchestration in keeping with 16th century Spanish practice. In this recording of the Magnificat on the sixth tone, written for three choirs, Harry Christopher's and the 16 double the lowest choir with a cornet and three sackbuts, the middle choir with organ and bass dulcian, a forerunner of the bassoon, and only the highest choir is unaccompanied throughout. The polychoral Magnificat on the sixth tone by Tomás Luis de Victoria, performed by the 16, directed by Harry Christophers, with added instrumental colour, as the composer would have liked it. Victoria's vocation took him first to the congregation of the Oratorio, Filippo Neri's new community of lay priests, and then to the chaplaincy of the Church of St. Jerome of Charity. It was during his time there that he published 5 volumes of music, funded in part by his own personal income from 5 Spanish benefices. In 1583, he was appointed visitor to the sick and Spanish destitute in Rome, under the aegis of the Confraternity of the Resurrection. This was a demanding job, involving a mixture of pastoral care and the composition of a great deal of music, including that for the Confraternity's twice-yearly services of 40 hours devotion. In that same year, Victoria published a new volume of his music, and in his dedication to King Philip II of Spain, he expressed a heartfelt desire to return to a quiet life in his native land. "To put an end to my labour of composing, to rest for a time in honest leisure, and to be able to compose my soul in contemplation, as befits a priest." The king, touched by his homage and his sincerity, appointed him chaplain to his sister, the Dowager Empress Maria of Austria, who was living in retirement in the convent of the Barefoot Nuns of St. Clair in Madrid. Here, Victoria was to spend the rest of his life. The convent housed 33 strictly cloistered nuns, whose daily mass was attended by priests who were all required to be accomplished singers of plainchant and polyphony. Victoria served the Dowager Empress as chaplain and was director of the convent choir until her death, at which point he stepped down a little into his retirement post of organist. Life in the convent was financially rewarding and very pleasant. The chaplains all enjoyed a number of perks, like personal servants, delicious meals served in their private quarters, and a month's annual holiday. And the services, at which his music was regularly sung, were attended by all the nobility of Madrid. And just referring back quickly to that question of instrumental doubling, in 1601 a royal decree authorised the employment by the convent of a bassoonist to play in all services. Victoria's fame as a composer was celebrated by the royal family. He was granted leave to return to Rome to supervise the printing of his second volume of masses. The income from his music was considerable, revenue arriving from as far away as Mexico and Colombia. He used it generously to help family members until his death at the age of 63 on the 20th of August 1611. We'll end today's programme with part of one of Victoria's most poignant works, his Missa pro Defunctis, Mass for the Dead, written for the funeral of the Dowager Empress in 1603. It was his job to write, rehearse and direct the music for the funeral rites, which were described at the time as the most solemn and sumptuous there have been in Spain. Between the funeral oration and the rite of absolution, there was a pause in the liturgy for a moment of contemplation. And for this moment, Victoria wrote a motet, in which his famed sunny disposition gave way to mourning for the Empress. He himself was buried in the convent 8 years later. Sadly, his grave is unmarked. From Victoria's Mass for the Dead, the Gabrieli Consort, directed by Paul McCreesh, perform the motet Versa est in luctum. My harp is tuned to mourning, and my organ imitates the voices of those who weep.
Versa Est in Luctum by Thomas Luis de Victoria, performed there by the Gabrieli Consort, directed by Paul McCreesh. And it ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Catherine Bott, and the producer was Rebecca Bean. In tomorrow's programme, Lucy Skeeping presents highlights from a concert recorded at Skálholt Church in Iceland. That's at the same time, just after 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3. And just a reminder, you can now download podcast versions of some previous editions of the Early Music Show from our website. Just go to bbc.co.uk/radio3. And follow the links to the Early Music Show webpage.
At the BBC Proms on Radio 3, the sublime classical music of South India. The latest mentor and mentee in our BBC Radio 3 World Roots Academy come together for a uniquely intimate concert, drawing on the depth of the South Indian classical tradition and transporting the BBC Proms to the land of temples. Vocalist Aruna Sairam and World Roots Academy protege Hari Sivanesan live on BBC Radio 3, Wednesday night at 10 o'clock.
And in fact, you can hear from the Academy and Hari Sivanesan in this afternoon's edition of World Roots at 3 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 3. It's coming up to 2:03, and time to hear again the first of this year's Proms Chamber Music Recitals, presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall, the home of Proms Chamber Music Recitals. Throughout the Proms season, we'll be here every Monday lunchtime with a stimulating selection of the best in chamber music and some very exciting performers. Cadogan Hall began life just over 100 years ago as a Christian Science church, handily placed just north of Sloane Square. It's now been given a new lease of life, splendidly restored as a concert hall. And today it's the scene not only for the first Proms Chamber Music concert, but the first solo harpsichord recital in the history of the Proms. The man at the manuals is former Radio 3 New Generation artist Mahan Esfahani, in whose hands, according to a recent review, the harpsichord comes out of hiding. He's going to play just one work. Keyboard practice comprising an aria with diverse variations for harpsichord with two manuals, set out for the spiritual refreshment of music lovers by Johann Sebastian Bach. They're better known as the Goldberg Variations, after a spot of wishful thinking and anecdotage, earmarking them for the young virtuoso Johann Gottlieb Goldberg. But Bach himself made no such dedication when the variations were published in 1741, the finale to his Klavierübung, or keyboard practice, series. It was said of Bach that he needed only to have heard any theme to be aware, it seemed in the same instant, of almost every intricacy that artistry could produce in the treatment of it. And the Goldberg Variations provide a hugely satisfying demonstration of his skill. An aria of captivating simplicity played at beginning and end, and between the bookends, 30 variations, riding the original bass line, every third one a canon, leading to a quadlibet, which is a joyous melange of several tunes at once. Within the architecture of the piece, there's room for a wealth of wit and atmosphere, and the Goldberg Variations are a Bachian peak that everyone wants to climb these days. Pianists, harpists, viol consorts, jazz trios. Now, though, we hear this astonishingly inventive masterpiece on the instrument for which it was written, the double manual harpsichord. To play Bach's Goldberg Variations, please welcome Mahan Esfahani.